Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. It's no secret that the way to maintain a healthy weight involves healthy eating habits and regular exercise. So what makes keeping that New Year's resolution to drop a few pounds so difficult? On the Call-In Show today, we'll discuss the impediments to healthy weight loss and strategies for healthy eating. We'd like to hear from you. You can email us at callinshow@kunm.org or call 277-5866 locally here in Albuquerque. You can also use our toll-free number, 877-899-5866. Joining us this morning to talk about keeping weight loss resolutions and making healthy life changes, Kate Latimer. She is a licensed mental health counselor and personal trainer. We're also joined this morning by Joan. She is a member of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Kate, let's start with you. This is a busy time of year for people who want to make healthy changes in their lives. We just heard a story on NPR about the business of weight loss programs, and it's one of the most popular New Year's resolutions. It's also one of the resolutions that people most often fail at keeping. What are some of the reasons for this?
You know,
explain it all, Kate.
Yeah, right. In 30 seconds or less. I think really what it comes down to is developing new patterns of thought and behavior, and that takes time. And it takes vigilance. It takes constant monitoring. There are also biological elements at play that are really beyond our control. Our metabolisms are all different. Some people do well eating this. Other people do well eating that. Some people do well with this type of exercise or that type of exercise. So there isn't really one blanket solution. Sorry, South Beach dieters or Atkins dieters or whatever diet you follow. And we're really talking about long-term change versus short-term, you know, 2 weeks or less dieting really isn't going to work for most people. So it's a very big undertaking, as probably Joan can attest to. It takes time and, yeah.
Well, Joan, Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous is a membership program modeled after Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
Can you first explain the importance of anonymity in the organization? You're here in an anonymous way this morning. What does the anonymity mean for members, and how does it affect people's participation?
Well, I've been in the program over 12 years, and it's about for 25 years before that, I struggled with weight. My top weight was 260 pounds. I couldn't do it on my own. I could do it with the program. Therefore, we attribute our success to a higher power, to the program, to the fellowship, and not to anything I could do on my own, because left to my own devices, I would 250 pounds.
And what are some of the challenges you faced in your time in the program where anonymity was helpful for you, where not having to share your experience with everyone, but being able to choose who?
Well, we have meetings and we share with each other and we network. And I think one of the biggest components of success in FA is the networking and fellowship and mutual support. It's like one alcoholic can talk to another alcoholic, like one food addict can talk to another food addict.
So how does FA work? Talk to me about how it works for members as compared to programs that are focused on substance use as opposed to food.
Well, we abstain from certain substances. We do not eat flour. We do not eat sugar. And we weigh and measure our food, not when we're in a restaurant, but on a food scale. So we control quantities. And even in that, we stay away from binge foods. If someone's binging on carrots or celery, we don't eat that, you know. So, and then we have the support of each other. So I eat normal food that you buy in a restaurant. There are no dues. There are no fees. And I've been doing it for, as I said, it's my 13th holiday season. I've come through without eating chocolate. But joyful. It's a program of joy of living. And as Kate said, it is about changing your behavior. And for us, it's around the addictive nature of food.
Well, and that the concept of addiction in relationship to food is a little bit different than the concept of addiction in relation to alcohol or other substances. Can you kind of delineate what's different about working with addiction for people who have food addictions as opposed to other types?
Well, I was in Overeaters Anonymous in and out for 25 years. I didn't know I was addicted to flour, let's say. My husband didn't like pasta, but I did. So I'd make a pound of spaghetti, and he had a little bit, and I ate the rest, and then I was sad because it was gone. I couldn't stop. Once I started eating sugar or flour or fat, the combination, I couldn't stop. And that's the difference with me. So I never heard the term food addict. Once I heard it, I went, that's someone who puts a needle in their arm. But I really do the same thing with ice cream or foods that are trigger foods for me. And if I stay away from them, it's like for an alcoholic, you don't drink half a martini. I just have to stay away. And it's not easy. It's simple. It's a simple concept, but it's not easy. And that's why we have the group. And that's why AA works for alcoholics. And this does work for food addicts.
We're talking about healthy eating resolutions after the recent New Year and ways to make lifestyle changes that help you maintain a healthy weight. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. Kate, can you talk a little bit about how mental health work can have an impact on people's healthy lifestyle choices? Where is it? Where's that difference between biology and psychology?
Wow, that's a big question.
Pick your favorite entrance into that.
Psychologists have been arguing about biology, nature, nurture for a long, long time. But I think that where mental health comes in and can really be a large assistance to people who are working towards weight loss is to really start looking at what are the thoughts and beliefs related to food. What are the emotional connections that we have to food? Just on the way down here, my baby was crying in the back seat of the car, and I handed her a cracker. You know, so if you develop a pattern of giving your child a cracker or whatever chocolate or candy, some people, you know, resort to get their kids healthy or happy, I mean, not so much healthy necessarily, that can really set up a lifelong pattern of an emotional connection to food. So I think that's where we can really do a lot of investigating as people, individuals, asking ourselves, well, what is my relationship to food? What do I try to get out of food that maybe I could get somewhere else?
Well, and it's not that an emotional connection to food is always a bad thing. I mean, I think about the role that foods play in our culture, in our family interactions, in our relationships to our bodies. So it's not that this emotional relationship is automatically bad, right?
No. It's about being conscious about what is that connection. And with every bite that we take, being aware of, I'm eating this maybe because it tastes good, or I'm eating this because I'm tired. I mean, there's a lot of other reasons that we eat besides I'm hungry and this nourishes me. If it was just about sustenance, we'd probably all be eating brown rice and kale every day. But we don't. We eat donuts too.
Yeah. Almost every culture in the world, Elaine, as you said, food is nurturing. It's maternal, and it's part of every culture. It's part of celebration. And so that we don't try to stop that in any way, you know. But just for us, we went over the edge with certain foods, just certain foods.
Let's take a call. Glenn in Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on there.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for this program. My wife is a teacher at a school, and just a huge percentage of kids are obese, and it's a concern. I'm one of the fortunate ones who, since high school, has maintained my same weight for 50 years. And I just think it's important, several things I'd like to comment on, to always have breakfast. I have coffee or tea with breakfast. Lunch and dinner are always with veggies. Dinner is the smaller meal for me. I never eat a meal just before I go to bed. I'll have a beer at lunch, and I dilute my red wine at dinner. Two drinks is my max any one day. I walk a lot, do exercises, drink four glasses of water every day. And I guess for your panel, I'd like to know, since my wife has taught me the negatives about partially hydrogenated things in our food and high fructose corn syrup, what their hit is on that. And I wish you all well and watching your weight. Good day.
So this question about corn syrup. I mean, I think, you know, Glenn has delineated his personal practices, and they're very, You know, it's very simple, but part of this question is, like, we all know that eating healthy and remaining active is part of what is involved. So why is it that we struggle so much?
Well, hydrogenated, the sugar, fructose corn syrup, is in almost every food, and it's a sugar derivative. And
packaged foods, right, or pre-prepared foods.
Right, pre-prepared foods. So the important thing is to read labels. That can set up a food craving. You know, and type 2 diabetes is on the increase with our adolescents because of the sugary diet drinks and foods that kids want to eat. You know, they taste good, I want more. They don't want to eat broccoli after a while because they'd rather have the cracker. So it's also a matter of parents educating their children and not turning to the junk food and to creating a joy of eating good foods. I try to eat organic. I can't always afford it, so I go to sunflower, you know, but it's a choice. Also, one of the things he says very important is to eat breakfast. I never ate breakfast when I was eating. I would roll out of bed at the last minute, you know, and by 10 o'clock I would be looking for junk food. Today I have to eat breakfast. You know, I have like oatmeal, yogurt, and a fruit. And coffee.
I definitely did. I didn't eat breakfast until I started this early morning gig here at KUNM because I was up so much earlier, and I am a devotee of breakfast.
Yep.
Kate, is that a strategy that you use with your clients as far as kind of setting up structures for that relationship with food and for eating?
Usually what I do with clients is I ask them what are the habits that they want to develop. I don't necessarily tell them, oh, you need to eat breakfast, or oh, you shouldn't eat this or that. But I ask them, well, what is it you would, how would you like to change your life? What would look more healthy for you as far as creating a new pattern? Because what we're really talking about is very old ingrained habits that are generally unconsciously happening throughout our day. So I specifically like to tailor to each individual person. Now, somebody may say, I've always just had a cup of coffee in the morning and that works for me. But what I really need to do is stop eating potato chips or stop eating a carton of ice cream after dinner every night or whatever it is. So again, it's to me, it's a very personal thing. And we all have to look at what is it that we're doing that we don't think we should be doing? Because that sets up, if we have this sort of cognitive dissonance, which is like something that we're doing that we don't really, we know we shouldn't be doing it, or we believe we shouldn't be doing it, then we start to feel guilt. Then that can create more patterns that are trying to assuage the guilt. So really looking at each individual probably knows deep down inside, I probably shouldn't eat this, or I'm going to feel bad about myself if I eat this. And so why do it?
Right. And there's that question of, well, why am I doing this then? Right, yeah. And trying to suss out the deeper connections or meanings.
I think it comes down to a compulsive response, a habitual response, an unconscious response. And so digging up all the you know, associations can help with that.
Let's take a few more calls. Kent in Albuquerque. Good morning, Kent. You're on the air.
Good morning. Well, there certainly is a lot of really very valuable information already. I, many years ago, owned a weight loss company. I currently have no interest whatsoever in anything having to do with diet or nutrition or whatever. But my experience personally and with quite a few other people has been, in addition to what's been mentioned so far, about the avoidance of refined products, white flour, white sugar, et cetera, you know, high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils, all those things, is that if a real effort is put into maximizing what I used to call the nutrient-calorie ratio, and now is called by some people the ANDI aggregate, what does it stand for? ANDI aggregate nutrient density index. That particular list I find very helpful.
Hey, Kent, can you do me a favor and explain what you mean by the nutrient-to-calorie ratio? My assumption is that not all calories have a lot of nutrients in them.
Exactly, exactly. There are foods, according to my, I have a doctorate, but it's in the combination of linguistics and psychology, so I'm not directly trained in nutrition. But on the other hand, in linguistics and psychology, there's a lot of awareness of human behavior, how people form habits and so forth. And so there are foods that are just very high in nutrients, such as kale, collard greens, bok choy, broccoli, and so forth. And then there are foods that are relatively low in nutrients per calorie. And so what I've had a lot of good experience with is finding the foods that are high on that list, this ANDI list. It's featured over at Whole Foods for one place. And, again, I have no interest whatever in Whole Foods. But eating foods that are high on that that list maximize the number of the amount of nutrients and phytonutrients per calorie. And then just learning to deal with those foods.
learning to cook kale is a wonderful lesson in exploring cooking. I ate some kale last night. Green curry. kale helps with the green curry. Kent, thanks for your call this morning. Let's go to Joni Rose in Rio Rancho. Good morning, Joni. You're on the air.
I'm Joni K. Rose. I'm in Rio Rancho. I'm a hypnotherapist in private practice. And my work is with recovery coaching. Most of my clients have been substance abusers, but specifically food addicts. Food addiction is by far the most frequent form of substance abuse. We need to keep that in mind. It is substance abuse, and it's far more common than alcoholism or drug addiction. So that's been actually the bulk of my clientele. It's more difficult because you can't just go cold turkey and stop eating forever the way you can with alcohol.
Right. There's no quitting entirely.
I think this is wonderful that you can stop eating certain kinds of food and learn to appreciate others. This is where working with the subconscious mind to learn to love, like someone said, greens. As opposed to pasta, which I also heard. I hadn't thought of pasta before, but actually that is a very good food not to eat. No sugar, no chocolate, all those types of things. So it is possible to actually not indulge in certain kinds of food, as well as reducing, if possible, which is possible usually, the overall food intake. And to love yourself for doing it, which is very, very important. If one feels negative and feels bad about oneself, what one has got to do is turn to your favorite indulgence, and which in this case will be food. So there has to be a lot of self-love involved and appreciation, and also being able to picture oneself being the way I want to look. And I could look in the mirror and picture myself maybe even barely half the size I am now. But it can be done. And I know it can because I've lost a lot of inches over around my waistline over the years and appear to be keeping them off fairly well. And I look, I've had to get rid of clothes because they were too big. And I've worked with people who have been through actually even more dramatic recoveries than that.
We're talking about making healthy lifestyle changes,
yes,
keeping that New Year's resolution to drop a few pounds. If you'd like to join the conversation and share what is a challenge that you faced in this kind of endeavor, some way that you found that was successful for you that you'd like to share, the number to call is 277-5866 locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Saggio's homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
Move over, eBay. It's the I Love KUNM online auction. If you own a business or provide a professional service, even if it's in-home or part-time, be part of this exciting online event. And if you donate now, you'll get publicity from today through February February 9th. So donate a gift certificate or an item of value, like art, jewelry, or collectibles. It's easy to do. Just log on to KUNM.org and click through to the auction site. Questions? Call Shanda at 505-277-2163.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and thanks for joining us this morning. We're joined in the studio this morning talking about making healthy lifestyle changes and losing weight. Kate Latimer is a licensed mental health counselor and personal trainer. We're also joined by Joan. She is a member of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous. I wanted to go to you, Joan, after the last caller that we had talking about food addiction as being more prevalent than other types of addiction to other types of substances.
Well, she said three things I'd like to address. First of all, food is legal. It's a legal substance. You know, it's not illegal. And kids, you know, we like sugar. We're taught that, and we're rewarded with that. I was from a very little girl. So, and the thing about food addiction, alcoholics can get the booze out of the house. You have to shop for food, prepare food. And in my case, I have a 12-year-old grandson. I have a lot of non-abstinent food in my house. So one of the tools we use, Elaine, which is very effective, is we write down our food for the following day, the night before. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, what we're going to have. So it takes out this, oh, what am I going to do? I think I'll just drive through Burger King. You plan, and you plan how we shop. And that's really great. The other thing Joni Rose said was imaging. I had an image. I did that. I put my fat face on a thin body on my refrigerator for 2 years. And I looked at that, and I kept imaging that I would be thin. But you know what? I didn't stop eating. I bought so many packages of lettuce and carrots that went black in the bottom of my fridge because I had good intentions, but I'd rather have the flour, sugar, salty, fat products instead. So when I found this program and I began to weigh and measure my food and write it down and plan, and then I have a sponsor, and for years I called my sponsor and would tell her what I was going to eat every day. And that was really, that's part of the behavior modification in FA, because it is about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that the structure of the program you're describing is why it's so successful for people. You have the support of other people going through similar struggles or who have gone through similar struggles. And then you have this very structured, consciously thought out and planned way of addressing cravings and of changing your whole lifestyle. Another thing that Joni brought up that I think is really important to address is that there is really a continuum of addiction. And yes, we all think of, you know, the cocaine addict or the heroin addict when we're talking about addiction, but addictions run on this continuum all the way through to, you know, sugar and flour and TV and other things that we do without a lot of conscious thought or with a certain compulsion, like we need to do it. So looking at those patterns of behavior again, I think, is a great start for launching into not so much a diet. Diets don't work because so often people feel very restricted and limited in what they are asked to do because of the diet. But measuring your food, learning what an actual serving of food looks like. My mom is an avid dieter. She diets all the time. And I've learned a lot just about portion control from her, because actually half an apple is a serving of fruit. But who eats half an apple, right? We eat the whole apple or the whole banana. So combining these awarenesses about food and what food has more nutrients, like the other caller said, I think is a really good place to start.
Let's take another call. Ishwari in Santa Fe. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for doing this program.
How would you like to participate in the conversation this morning?
Well, just briefly, I think I'm a psychotherapist in Santa Fe, and there is a program or a system of inner child work that I use quite a bit. It's called Inner Bonding. There's a fabulous website that basically gives you all you need to know to practice it. But it's a system of learning to love yourself, really learning to love yourself. And it's inherent in the system is sorting through false beliefs and learning how to take loving action. on your own behalf. And with addictions, such as food addictions or sex addictions or lots of other addictions, the system can be really, really helpful for the individual, whether you have a therapist or whether you're doing it on your own. So I just wanted to introduce that.
Great. Thanks, Iswari. I also want to go, did you have another comment? Sorry.
Well, I just wanted to give the website. It's innerbonding.com.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to continue with a question about the relationship between our mental health and our bodies, our physiological relationships with these substances, with food. I mean, evolutionarily, there are reasons why our bodies want fat and sugar and salt, right? That those were things that were, at least as we're evolved as hunter-gatherers, to, you know, not have as much in our environment, and so therefore to really kind of grab onto them and eat as much of them as we can. And I'm thinking about this article in the New York Times Magazine called The Fat Trap, which describes some research findings about the way that the body responds to weight loss. And I'd like to get both of your response to that article. The article makes the point that for many of the participants in these research studies, after losing weight, the body then tries to put the weight back on, and that creates different challenges for people who've lost weight than it does for people who have never gained weight to begin with.
Well, I think we have to really make a distinction between people who are recovering from a food addiction and people who are going on a diet. It's a very different thing. When we're dieting, if we reduce our calories by more than 500 calories a day, our body will say, oh no, this is terrible. We're going into a famine. Everybody slow down, slow the metabolism down, use the food that you have, you know, very carefully.
Batten down the hatches.
Exactly. And so a lot of people experience frustration with dieting because of that starvation response. So learning to make slow changes over time, like reducing, if you put sugar or in your coffee or tea, maybe you just take out the 2 tablespoons of sugar you're putting in your coffee or tea, and over a year's time you could lose about 10 pounds just doing that one small thing. Now if you're coming from a food addiction perspective, I would imagine it's a little bit different.
Well, there's several things. In Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, we do not count calories. We abstain from certain foods and we control the quantities of those foods. So there's that. And it's also what the last caller talked about, the inner child. This is a program of self-care.
Yeah.
You know, I did years and years of binge eating. I was either on a diet or I hated myself because I was eating. I didn't like being on a diet. I felt restrictive. And what you said, Elaine, about hunter-gatherers, the body will go into a starvation mode if you reduce the calories. That's why we don't count them. I've been on a maintenance for over 11 years. I lost my weight in 11 months, and I was 55 years old, postmenopausal. It took me 11 months to lose 80 pounds because I had already lost the 40. And I've maintained that, which means I have to eat a certain amount of carbohydrates like potatoes or rice or quinoa every day. So I eat 4 ounces at lunch and dinner, for example. Men get more. It's very balanced. I don't have any food cravings. But I did when I was in the food. If I ate sugar, it sets up that uncontrollable craving. That's what we can take away a day at a time. You know, this is not a program you can do. I want to not eat sugar or chocolate for life, but maybe, you know, for lunch I won't have to do it.
We're talking about making healthy lifestyle changes, ways to be successful, dropping a few pounds, keeping that New Year's resolution. Please join the conversation with your challenges and successes. The number is 277-5866 locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. And let's go to Hillary in Albuquerque. Good morning, Hillary. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this show. I don't think there's nearly enough talk about the addictive qualities of our relationship to food. And I just wanted to add another resource. In thinking about changing our behaviors and our thoughts, as someone's been mentioning, I think we have to look at the larger society also in terms of how that affects our behavior and thoughts. And we live first in a very addictive society. It's promoted all around us in many ways. And then secondly, for women in particular, there's a tremendous pressure to look a certain way. There's a lot of advertising that really emphasizes a certain look, and people's bodies can practically rebel about that, and addictions can come out of that. So I wanted to offer, it's an old book, but one resource that for women who were particularly exposed to a lot of pressure around that, as I was, and I had a 45, 50-pound overweight problem, eating disorder, I'd call it, during my teen years from this, and a book named Fat is a Feminist Issue by Susie Orbach made a huge difference about looking at it in terms of where is this coming from? What's the purpose of this fat? And it was to hide. It was to hide from that pressure. And I just wanted to offer that cultural perspective also on the makings of food addiction. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Hillary. So, and I, my background is in media studies. And so, you know, I'm very familiar with the way that you might turn on the TV and see an image of a very, very slender kind of this, in air quotes, ideal woman, and then right after see a commercial for Burger King or something, that there's this contrast between the products that we're encouraged to buy and the ways that our bodies are supposed to, again, I'm using air quotes, supposed to look.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would either of you care to dive into the media morass when it comes to body consciousness and food?
I think she really hit a very tender point with the feminist issue. I mean, I grew up in the 1960s, and around right about age 12, you know, my body wasn't right. It didn't fit the twiggy image at the time, right? The real thin, so far. I mean, that wasn't me. That's what started the dieting. There's something wrong with me. So my first addiction was smoking. Mm-hmm. And I smoked for years because I could control my weight that way. And I am relieved of that. One of the other things I wanted to point out is women don't have to be any particular size, but there is health today. So for me in particular, when I came in, I had low blood pressure. It's maintained a very low level now, but my cholesterol dropped 150 points in the first 3 months, and it stayed there. So there's a tremendous health benefit. Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous is about the other side as well. So many women are anorexic, they'll never be thin enough, or they're bulimic, and they can start that in school or college. I'll eat whatever I want, and then I will purge it in some way. They can be exercise bulimics. Kate, you could probably address that.
Yeah.
They can be bulimic. So FA addresses the anorexia, the bulimia, as well as the binge and overeating.
And I also want to point out that this is something that men are challenged with, too.
Absolutely.
Young men, absolutely. Adult men, that there are ideals that are presented as ideal ways for men to look. And, you know, it's different than for women, but clearly an issue. I think, Joan, you had mentioned to me that the number of young men suffering from bulimia has grown in recent years.
Right. And they start by using bulimia for alcohol in fraternities,
mm-hmm.
and then they can carry it over.
Let's take another call. Julie in Albuquerque. Good morning, Julie. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to bring in the smoking. I heard a podcast recently about a woman who had smoked her whole life, and she was trying to give it up. And she'd spent her whole life doing civil rights work, and so she made a pact with her friend, and she said, if I have one more cigarette, I'm going to write a check to the KKK for $5,000. And she never smoked another cigarette because every cigarette represented, a present competition between the cigarette and her life's work. And what they said was that brought the consequence of her action to the future, because if you have a future consequence but a present pleasure, then the present pleasure will win. And so I tried to think of a way to do that with eating. I don't have a lot of weight to lose, but my downfall is sweets. And I thought, well, it's unreasonable to say I'm never going to have another sweet in my life. So I decided I would just give myself a month. I said, okay, a month to reset your metabolism. And if I do that, if I have a dessert or cookie just for that 1 month, then I would do something that was unpleasant, like donate to a particular political party that I don't agree with, which is kind of funny. And it worked. But then I realized, too, with resetting my metabolism, because when I have a little bit of chocolate, then I want a lot. So by resetting it, I realized that was felt really good. And then the consequence itself of feeling better, I didn't need to threaten myself with donating to a party. So I kind of just do that every now and then to kind of, like, clear my head and clear my craving. And it's hard for about 3 or 4 days, and then it's easy. And I know next month I can have some, so it's not like I'm depriving myself forever. But it seems to work for me.
Thanks for your call, Julie. Let's go to Maria in Albuquerque. Good morning, Maria. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just want to finish doing an extensive research on the obesity in the United States. It's the cover story of this issue of Primetime Monthly News. And what I found was that, you know, calories are cheap in a wealthy nation, and that's why we in the United States are so heavy, and that the worst food, the most intoxicated food are those foods that are cheapest to buy for the poorest population, like all the fast foods. And the other thing that we found is that all of the chemical flavors in foods, those chemicals are now in the DNA of the fruits and vegetables in the mainstream media, the mainstream food supply. So this obesity does have some to do with overeating and, you know, abuse, abundant calorie intake, but a lot of it has to do with the foods that are being consumed that the body cannot metabolize and burn off like a natural occurring sugar. So, I think it's something to start talking to people about, being really, really conscious of eating local, not eating foods out of, being careful about the meats that they're eating, foods that are treated with the insecticides and pesticides that, you know, are now in the DNA of the food, which has poisoned. I mean, the U.S. food supply is poisoned. It's just horrible. 60 Minutes has done reports on it. NPR has done reports on it. I mean, there's extensive research out there now about how incredibly important it is for people to be eating whole foods, organic foods, no frozen foods, no processed foods, no fast foods, and really, restaurants are horrible.
Thanks for your call this morning, Maria. Let's take another call. John calling from Algodones. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine. It's your dad.
Hi, Dad.
Disclosure, I am Elaine's father. But what I want to comment about was childhood experience. When I was small in the 50s, we had a very parsimonious household, and we had no treats or cookies or candy or potato chips or sodas or anything like that around. The only time I ever saw things like that was when I would go to a friend's house or we'd go celebrate in some way. So all of my issues with food have to do with associating those sweets and salty fat foods with celebration. And so that turns into a reward for me, which I'm sure I'm not the only person to have. Anyway, I'd like your our guest to comment on that, Elaine.
Great. Thanks, Dad.
Okay.
So sweets as rewards, I mean, we've kind of touched on it a little bit. You mentioned, Kate, your cracker to your daughter this morning in the car. but also, you know, we're fresh off the holidays where people have been spending time with family and friends and doing kind of special holiday things surrounded by kind of special holiday foods.
So how do we recreate that feeling? Oh, I felt really happy when I ate pumpkin pie or apple pie with my family. So I'm going to go get a frozen apple pie and pop it in and recreate that experience, because we do have something called same state memory. And if our senses are, as many senses are as are involved in the memory, we will be able to recreate that memory by stimulating the same sensory response.
I'm remembering once using one of those cans of whipped cream and just pulling it out of the fridge and opening my mouth and just, you know, I mean, those opportunities to kind of connect with memories and relationships.
Yes.
Joan, did you have a comment?
First of all, I can relate to your dad. Growing up in the 50s also, sugar, first of all, a candy bar was a nickel, and everybody, you know, I could get 3 cents and go to a candy store and spend a lot of time trying to decide what to eat. There also were treats, and it's food is so associated with pleasure moments, you know. So in FA, we say, well, there can be pleasure moments without food, and we can enjoy the food that we do have. I'm very grateful for that. There's a Food Addiction Institute, and they have a newsletter called Food Addiction News. This just came out. It said, average Americans eat 22 teaspoons worth of refined sugars every day. So there's something that's going to be called Sugar Addiction Awareness Day. This is really important. The lady that called in about the pollution of our food supply, she's got very excellent points. But not only do we have cheap calories, it's what they are. And we live such a fast-paced lifestyle. It's so easy to grab and go.
Let's go to, I think it's Pamela in Cedar Crest. Good morning, Pamela. Thanks for joining us this morning. You're on the air.
Hi, it's actually Pamela.
And Pamela.
Yes, I'm speaking to a couple of things that have come up in a way already, but in a slightly different vein. I wanted to make 2 points. One is that the preparation of healthy food takes time, and there's a real difference between making a pie and the labor that goes into that and choosing fresh ingredients and going and buying one. And in a way, it's a disincentive to just eat one's fill when one is having to do the work or the labor of preparing good and healthy food. And I think as a society, we've come away, we've lost our sense of the importance of preparing food and choosing food carefully. The second thing I wanted to say is that people seem to lose the taste for real food that isn't flavored with saturated fats and sugars unless they're engaged in preparing it and having food that's carefully prepared for them. So my children, for instance, will eat kale and will eat brown rice and enjoy it because that's what they've had. But their friends find the taste of healthy, fresh foods distasteful because they're used to sugar and fats.
Thanks, Pamela. Mm-hmm. Let's also go to Marie, calling from Albuquerque. Good morning, Marie. You're on the air.
Yes, my name is Maureen, actually. And I'd like to add another resource. I am a member of Overeaters Anonymous. We're a 60-year-old program, and quite similar to what Joan is talking about with Food Anonymous, 12-step program. We address all the issues. Our brains, food addicts, their brains are glitchy from the get-go, even without the hormones and the adulteration in food. So I just want to, there are many successes in OA, many great weight losses and maintenance. We also have anorexics and bulimics. It's just another part of the disease.
Maureen, can you talk to me a little bit about what it means to be a member of a group when you're talking about overeating? How does that work for you?
One person, one food addict talking to another is so much different than talking to a professional or a so-called quote-unquote normal person with food. You just have nuances that spark comfortability, if you will, with each other. We all know where whoever's speaking at a meeting, we know where you are, where you've been, what you do in private, that sort of thing. So that sort of support is so enormously helpful.
Great. Thanks a lot, Maureen. Let's go now to Rachel in Gallup. Good morning, Rachel. You're on the air.
Good morning, Helen. I want to comment that this is a great discussion. One of the things that I want to touch upon is that regarding long-term maintenance, whether you're bulimic, anorexic, or a chronic overeater, exercise, physical activity is incredibly important, not only in maintaining a metabolic set point, but in giving yourself another way to occupy your time rather than being distracted by food. Now, there is a certain
issue with some people called exercise bulimia, which is another aspect of food addiction, in which people will eat what they want and then they will exercise chronically in order to, address that issue. But if approached rationally, physical activity is an incredibly important part of recovery from food addiction. Thanks so much.
You know, I in my own personal life, I've found that I only I only get physically active when I'm doing things that I enjoy. Mm. You know, like I'm not really interested in running,
right,
at all. And so if I set up running as the activity that I need to do for my health, then I don't do it. Whereas if I give myself the opportunity to hike or dance.
Right. One of the themes that have come up over and over as we've had this discussion is the idea of positive and negative reinforcement or punishment and reward. So if we do set up something in our lives that does feel like a reward, whether it's, you know, I've stuck to my program and I'm going to go buy myself a new pair of skinny jeans because I feel like I deserve that, then that's one way to play with sort of the mental and psychological aspects of what we're up against. So if you can reward yourself by going for a long hike or a swim or something that's physical, then that's also a healthy reward, as opposed to, you know, we don't necessarily want to get into shopping as a reward, because there can be
other issues associated
with that. We can have a whole other show on shopaholics. And
we can go from one addiction to another. You know,
yeah,
I'm very much cross-addicted.
Very
but
much.
I took up dancing and dance lessons, and, you know, I'm a widow, and so I really, after 2 hours of dance class, it's a workout, and I love it.
What kind of dancing do you do, Joan?
I do ballroom, country, and swing.
Nice.
And Latin.
Nice. Let's take a few more calls. Doug in Pecos. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi. I wanted been very interesting conversation this morning, and I just wanted to point out that after my experience with dieting and researching the issue, that as far as science is concerned, is strictly for weight gain, it really doesn't matter what you eat. Cane sugar, refined sugar, does not have a different weight gain effect on you than honey does, or agave syrup. Hydrogenated vegetable oil does not have a different weight gain effect on you than virgin olive oil or organic butter. And it really does matter. I mean, it changes with your cholesterol and possibly even your complexion. But as far as just weight gain, it really matters how many calories you eat in a day compared with how many calories that you burn in a day. And an interesting kind of humor study that was done recently was called the Twinkie Diet by a nutrition researcher. And what he did was he adjusted from his normal healthy 2,000-calorie diet to eating 1,600 calories a day of pure junk food, Twinkies, potato chips. And he lost weight because he was eating less calories. And obviously it's not a very healthy long-term solution. But I just want to point out that it really is important to look at your input and output, because that will ultimately affect how much weight your body puts on. Thank you.
Let's take another call. Patrick in Santa Fe. Good morning, Patrick. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for putting on your show. And I got very interested in the article in the New York Times magazine about weight loss, and that it was would be recommended for somebody trying to diet. I myself had learned about 5 or 6 years ago that I created planter boxes that go year-round and have kale and chard and arugula and always onion starts that are in there, and you can chop off the tops. And I use that as part of my food supply. And I won't give that up. I'm not going to stop doing that, because it turned out that that food supply to me is something I know about, and it worked out as a if I go away from it for a while, it's noticeable. And I just wanted to put out that to the listeners. And I thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Patrick. So Kate and Joan were coming up on the end of the show, and I wanted to get last comments from each of you as far as kind of number one recommendations for people who've made a resolution this year to change their eating habits, to maybe lose a little weight, to incorporate, you know, healthy behaviors into the lifestyle that maybe haven't been there consistently over time. You know, what are the kind of top three recommendations that you have for people, Kate?
Well, first of all, I would really ask, why have you made the resolution? What is it that you're trying to do? Do you want to eat healthier because you care about yourself and you want to live longer and be with your family longer? Or do you really come from a place of, I don't like myself, I want to lose weight because I don't like the way I look? I think the motivation is really important to tease out, because one is coming from a loving place and one is coming from a loathing place. However, there are, you know, there have been great, great suggestions. I don't recommend the Twinkie diet, but I do recommend exercise, namely because it changes your chemistry, your body chemistry, similar to the way that sugar will, except it's a healthier, more long-lasting effect. Definitely incorporating more fruits and vegetables, drinking more water, limiting sugar, alcohol, and fat will be healthier, and will also have the additional benefit of reducing fat index, if that's what you're going for.
Joan, your comments for people.
Well, people can check out our website, which is foodaddicts.org, and there's a list of 20 questions, and you can see whether you think you're a food addict or not. So come to a meeting.
I have that here. I'll read a couple of them. The first question is, have you ever wanted to stop eating and found you just couldn't? Do you find yourself attempting one diet or food plan after another with no lasting success? Has a doctor or a family member ever approached you with concern about your eating habits or your weight? Do you eat to escape your feelings? Do you eat when you're not hungry? And we've touched on some of these earlier in the hour. Have you ever stolen other people's food?
Yes, like Halloween candy from my kids.
We have a shared refrigerator here at KUNM, and periodically food will go missing from the refrigerator. Do you obsessively calculate calories you've burned against calories you've eaten? I guess the distinction there being that there can be healthy ways to do that and then kind of more obsessive ways to do that. Are you waiting for your life to begin when you lose the weight? Those are some of these questions from the Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous website for kind of sussing out your relationship with food.
Right. And I think ultimately maybe a good New Year's resolution is to, as Kate said, to love and respect yourself and see if you want to do something good this year. Make a healthy choice, you know.
Can you tell the website again,
foodaddicts.org.
And Kate, what's your website? And we'll post both of these websites on KUNM.org.
So it's just katelatimer.net.
katelatimer.net. We've been talking with Joan. She's a member of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous. It's a membership program modeled after Alcoholics Anonymous. And also Kate Latimer. She is a licensed mental health counselor and personal trainer, talking about how to keep that New Year's resolution and drop a few pounds in a healthy and sustainable way. If you'd like to listen to this show again, you can find it on our website, kunm.org. It'll be posted within the first maybe 10 minutes after the show is over. Next week on the KUNM Call-In Show, we'll be joined by psychiatrist William Breitbart. He is an international leader in research and compassionate care for the terminally ill. And we'll also be talking about the new fellowship in psychosomatic medicine that the University of New Mexico Department of Psychiatry has announced. We'll have a couple of people talking about that fellowship program also, talking a little bit more about this relationship between mental health and physical health, and Dr. Breitbart's work with terminally ill patients. That's next week on the KUNM Call-In Show at 8 o'clock Thursday morning. Thanks for so much for joining us this morning. If you'd like to send us your comments or questions, the email address is callinshow@kunm.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel.